Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And today, another one of my oldest friends in the wrestling business is here, King Haku. Yeah, brother. Tonga from Tonga. I met him when I was working in Mexico, and he took me under his wing. We had a lot of great times there. We fought the whole airport security at one point, which we'll talk about. We were in Japan together, had great times there, WCW, WWE. We traveled the world, and a lot of people would say he's the toughest man in the wrestling business. I would agree with you. I would agree with them, and I'm sure you would agree with me if you saw some of the things that I've seen from Tonga, who is the nicest guy. I call him Tonga because that's his real name. Sorry, King Haku. He's the nicest guy in the world, but when you get him rolling, man, the stories for decades about how tough he is and about the people that he's beaten up over the years. We don't get into that too much because we don't want to risk any lawsuits, but we're going to talk all about him. We're going to talk about growing up on the small island of Tonga close to Samoa and how he went from sumo to pro wrestling in Japan. He started out as a sumo wrestler in Japan, then changed it to pro wrestler. He's talking about tag teaming with his cousin, the Barbarian, and of course the legendary Andre the Giant, meeting Tenryu Genshiro, our boss in wrestling and romance, and how Vince McMahon ultimately found him, brought him to the WWE, and gave him the King Haku gimmick. It's a great conversation filled with some of our crazier stories together from our time in Mexico. It was great to reconnect with Tonga from Tonga. So King Haku is coming up. And so is another big Jericho Network announcement. There's another new show joining the network. I'm going to tell you all about it right after this show, right after King Haku. So stay tuned for that. I'll give you a hint. It's not a wrestling show, but it's definitely going to be something you dig. It's something that I dig a lot, and you hear a lot of it here on Talk is Jericho. So stay tuned.
Talk is Jericho.
Came to a very high-class hotel room in Pacific, Florida, to meet up with one of my oldest friends in the wrestling business, Haku Tonga. This is always known you, but King Haku. was one of the friendliest and toughest guys in the history of the business. Do you ever hear the rumors when people talk about how tough you are?
You know, I don't know, Chris. If there's anybody that, you know, is around me the old days, you know, yeah. How it was, you know, we go crazy, especially me. And thank you to you, you know, with all those time that we were in Mexico, yeah. Crazy stuff that we did in Mexico with, you know, with the Guerrero and, you know, you, Smiley, the black man. You know, it's, you know, it's now and then, you know, Chris, that it touched me because I never thought that, you know, my children will grow up and want to be wrestlers. Mm-hmm. So now they're on the road and hear stories, and then, you know, they come home and ask questions, you know. So, you know, those are the things that, I have to sit down and talk with them. You know, it was nothing to be brag about. It's just when you're hungry and, you know, have family and, you know, waiting on you, the country of Tonga, you know, if it's making any sense or anything, you know, it's such a small little island that you always said, yeah, Tonga, we're from this little small island called Tonga. You know, you always make fun of that. We had fun talking about that.
Well, both of your sons now work in Japan, which is where you made a big name for yourself in wrestling and in sumo.
We did.
Yes. But do your sons come home sometime and say, Dad, you know, Hattori told me this story about you or something? Does that happen sometimes?
Yes, yeah. a lot. Yeah. You know, now that they open up, mm-hmm. you know, like I said to them, Chris, you know, I'm not only your father, let's put it on the side there, but, you know, I can be also a coach. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but if you guys need some help, you know, there'd be things that I can help out. But, mm-hmm. you know, you guys, I think they'll do better than I did.
But you talk about Tonga, and Tonga is a small island close to Samoa, but it's right. even smaller. When you grew up on that island, was it kind of more of a primitive type of a thing? What was Tonga like when you were a kid?
Yeah, Tonga was, when I grew up, we just like, the best I can said, you know, was like England. Mm. You know, with the king and the queen, we had the last Polynesian, you know, monarch that's still around. And at the time, they did say so. You know, it wasn't just a airhead, and, you know, when I grew up. So, you know, all the respect, you know, it was the king and the queen, and also their house, the children, the prince and the princess. And also, we come to the nobles, and then, you know, you come to the workers, you know, peasants there. So, you know, it was, that's what we did. You know, we have to, you know, our, well, what you call, the food, the best that we have while we had our garden and all the stuff we have to, there are time that the community will get together and get the best of all everything that we have and, you know,
share it
and give it to the king.
Okay, that's your tithing.
Yes, yeah, you know, like that. You know, that's what's yes.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah.
So the rumor always was, and it's funny. I just saw Barbarian a few months ago somewhere, and I was reminded of the story that I'd always heard that when you and Barbarian were teenagers, that you two were like the toughest guys on Tonga.
Well, him, you know, as you see how he built and everything, you know. He was that good, you know, and also a good rugby player. Yeah, but, you know, he was on the next village to my village. You know, we're still talking about village here. Can you believe that?
Are you guys related at all?
No, no, he's from another island. You know, we have probably, you know, I left, Chris, I left, 1974. Was 152 islands. Uh-huh. Believe it or not, now it's 162 islands. So it comes from somewhere while we were away, and you know, with all the volcano and stuff like that. So you know,
did you ever hear about him? Did you guys know of each other?
Yeah. I know where he lived. I know where because at the time, you know, with my relatives and everything, with the schooling and all this stuff like that, primary school, you know, that I went to where he went to school at, you know, primary school there. So that's, we grew up together that way and, you know, went to high school, same high school.
Was he tough back then?
Very tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, he's, as a rugby player, my goodness, you know, it's, he can run through a lot of people before they, you know, take about, four or five people to take him down, you know.
Yeah.
But that's how strong he was, you know, big legs, you know, he was that strong, you know.
I remember one time when we were in Mexico, we were on the beach or something, there was a coconut tree. And we were going to try and drink rum out of the coconut.
Right.
So you climbed up the tree just like a monkey, just and you shook the tree and you had a machete and you cut the coconut down. Right. It's something you learned in Tonga,
yes,
I assume?
Yes. You know, in the island, Chris, you know, you have to. And I remember.
You remember that?
Exactly,
yeah.
That day, you know, that we, you know, tried to mix it with rum. And, you know,
it didn't turn out too well.
Yeah. And yes, that's, you know, in Tonga, you grew up, that's what we do. You know, I grew up in the white man said, grass hut.
You know, grass hut. Yeah.
But it's made out of coconut. Coconut is very important to us in the island because, you know, we make our hut or, you know, weave the leaves and, you know, and that's how we build our houses. The old. And I grew up on a little hut like that with my mom and dad, you know, and my two sisters.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, that was, and then you had to climb, you know, because, you know, mom and dad, then they're down there waiting for the leaves to come down. And of course, you know, in the same time, you had to cut the coconut down, you know, so we can eat and drink from it while we are weaving, you know, the leaves.
Yeah. Right, all right.
Yeah, get
so would you say, Tonga, get up there and get some coconuts?
Yes, yes. You get up there and, you know, cut down the leaves and get some coconuts. So, you know, yeah.
How do you climb up a bamboo tree like that?
Well, yeah, you know, you grew up.
Yeah, just doing it. Yeah.
So, you know, you see everybody doing it, so you have to, you know, and then you, there's the day that, you, of course, you try, but you can't, you know, really make it. And then you slide down and, you know, it just
rips,
you know,
your legs apart.
Yes, your inner thighs, your legs apart. And that's part of it. That's how you learn to climb. And then finally you, you know, be able to do it like a big man. You know, you, you just run up like a monkey and run down like a monkey.
So did you start sumo wrestling in Tonga? Or how did you end up going to Japan for that?
Yeah, exactly at the time I was 14 years old. The king brought it and, you know, show it to us how to do it and everything. Believe it or not, you know, that was something for us, was a no-no, a big no-no. Because
to be,
know,
a sumo wrestler?
No, to, oh, for the king to...
Oh, to show you.
To show us and teach us, you know. So, yeah. But he, you know, he was there and, you know...
So you actually knew the king?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in that way, yes.
You know, okay, because usually you wouldn't know the king. The king, right, would be in the palace,
but,
somewhere.
Right. But believe it or not, you know, they know more of us than us. You know what I'm, mm-hmm, saying? They know where you come from, you know, who is your parents, where, you know, your ancestor, because of the kings.
Yeah,
you,
okay,
know, like I said, the people, they have to learn,
gotcha,
to know, you know, their people.
Right, okay.
So, yeah.
So they would take the time to come and show the kids,
yes,
how to do,
yes,
that.
Yes, and, you know, of course, with the government, you know, schools at home then, the high school that, you know, belonged to the government was the first one. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the other side of it was the police and, of course, the military. You know, we have like 20 people, I guess we call it military.
It's your army.
Yeah. That's our army, exactly. So, you know, that's how it started there. But I guess you already had a deal with Japan. It was, you know, Tonga was the fishing. We were way back, you know, you go there with, what you call, an island with a, you know, tied to a rock and, you know, throw it down there.
With a string tied to a rock, yeah.
And just put a little piece of bread there or, you know, one of our root stuff that, you know, that we eat, you know, and, yeah, that's how we... You know, fishing those days, or just throw a rock, you know, because, you know, it was, those days were still good, you know, the fish was just swimming around in front of you.
There were so many,
like,
of them.
Yeah.
So you could just throw a rock and kill,
yeah,
a fish?
Yeah, or, you know, have the stick, the big stick, and just hit the fish those days, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they had a deal, though, for...
Yeah,
with
Japan, and then on top of it, that company... also was a big sponsor for the staple or the pear that, you know, we call Asahiyama pear.
Because that's what sumo is. They have stables of, like, is it like a coach that has a stable of,
right,
guys?
You, okay, know, like a, yeah, like exactly. Dormitory.
Mm, okay.
You know, we have our dormitory there on top of, you know, second floor. And then we have the toy hall. You know, our training, you know, place downstairs, you know, we have our cooking place also. And that was neat, you know. So you not only wrestle and respect the seniority, very, as you know, with me and Tenryu, you know, was always, no matter what, you know, Tenryu is my seniority, I bow and all that stuff for him with the respect. Same thing, you know, that's what, you know, in sumo.
Because you,
know,
you met Tenryu when he was also sumo.
Yes.
But he was higher up in the food chain,
oh,
than you.
Oh, way, yeah, way, yeah, high up there. But, you know, I'm not bragging or anything. We were just lucky and, you know, that, you know, we grew up in Ireland. That's, you know, you're 9 years old. You're out there, you know, cut the grass and, you know, with a machete and, you know, like you said,
yeah,
you know, climbing up the coconut tree up in the... So, you know, the strength was there. So in the Japanese thought that, you know, we'll be good because we sit on the floor, sleep on the floor just like them.
Mm.
So, you know, with our back, you know, hips and stuff like that to throw and, you know, all those.
Yeah, big legs,
yeah,
big ass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
I remember when I first met you, it was 93 in Mexico. And there's a couple times when you always insisted on paying for my food if we went somewhere.
Yeah,
it was the relationship of the kohai and the senpai. I,
right,
was the kohai, you're, yeah, the senpai, and, yeah, you always said, I always have to pay, that's just the way that it is.
Yeah.
Something that I took with me over the years. But that was the way it is. If you were somebody's senpai and you had your young boys, you would take care of them that way?
Yes. Hmm. Especially with sumo. You know, as you know, sumo, the pro wrestling was, you know, one of Riki Tosan, mm-hmm. who started it. He was a sumo wrestler.
Right.
You know, number three in the rank there, Sekiwake, that brought in. So it's very, very unique in that way, of the way they live and everything. And Tenryu-san was always, you know, look after me, you know, and that's my giving to him. You know, as you and my one of my best friend there, you know, we always together there and stuff like that. It's not because I have money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always broke, and you know, in that way. But you know, my heart, that was what we, you know, I learned, and what Tenryu always, and sumo wrestlers, no matter where you met and where you see them and everything, was always like that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take care of the kohai, you have to take care of the young one. You know, they always believe when things go around.
And then what would the kohai do for the senpai?
The kohai, you know, like the respect there, you know, what they do, the cooking, the food and stuff like that. Especially where Tenryu was. Tenryu is just wake up in the morning and come and train whenever he wants to, when you get to that rank.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, after, you know, the training, you know, two or three guys, kohai, they're already in the kitchen to make the food. So if the sekitori, that's what, you know, the name for all
called,
of them,
live
outside on his own apartment, he's going to eat there with everybody. But they eat first.
Ah.
If there are two of them or one of them or five of them, they eat together. Or he eat by himself, you know.
Gotcha.
Sometimes the oyakata, you know, the master or the boss, you know, will come and join, you know, just because we're training together and stuff like that. So, you know, that's, as the kohai, we all sit around and, you know, all they do is pass their chawang, you know, with the rice, for rice and whatever, you know, we all there to serve them.
Yeah.
As you know, because there will be a day as we grow and, you know, and win the winning and everything, and you're going to become one of them. And then, you know, the next generation.
The cycle continues. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Continue, you know, it goes around and around.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Talk is Jericho.
Sitting here with King Haku, and let's pick it back up with sumo. So what is the secret to like winning a sumo match?
Techniques, you know, speed, you know. I only said from what I did.
Right.
You know, because in a year, I was in the rank that it took the Japanese those days 5 years to get there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were good.
I guess so.
You have to say that. You're too humble.
Yeah, you know, I guess so in that way, Chris, you know, that was. But yet, in the same time, we were encouraged also by the guys. You know, they were very nice of our seniority, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they always said, you know, when you win, when you go up there, you know, you'll be able to go home, you know. So we were fighting hard, you know, to get there. So, you know, in a year, I was up there, you know, and the other guy was named Minami no Shima, also from the same high school. We were the first two that sent to Japan for sumo.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then when did you decide to leave sumo to try wrestling?
It's a long story.
Yeah.
You know, when we were there, we were the third outsider that came in there. First was American. Hawaiian was Jesse Takamiyama at the time, and he was doing great. You know, I think he was also number three, Komosubi, you know, like Riki Dosan at the time. So, and there was another guy, Chinese. He was a little smaller, and, you know, he didn't get nowhere. And then us coming in there, you know, it was a big thing. So, you know, here we are. at your rank here with WWE, that's how we were with sumo. Before we even get to the, where we should be.
Okay.
But because we were outsider coming into, we were TV. It was like every night we were on TV.
Did you have some notoriety? Were you kind of famous?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Right. Yeah.
What was your sumo name?
Fukunoshima Hiroshi. Yeah. It's Happy Island. Yeah. We were named like, Minami no Shima is the South Island, Yashinoshima, the Coconut Island, Hinodeshima, and Tomonoshima was the Friendly Island, and then Barbarian was Sachinoshima, the Lucky, Island or whatever, that's how they... we're all islanders.
Right.
Yeah.
So you had some fame on TV, so
yes,
people knew
yes.
you at this point.
We were trained and hurry up, and so that's what happened, when the widow... how it was. Sumo, even with the Japanese themselves, don't understand what is going on in there, but they live in that samurai style. Some, women was always behind, what I'm saying? So as our, what we call Okami-san, that's our Oyakata's wife, if the Oyakata died, if the boss died, she has to sell the stable right away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she can't live on it, own it. She have to sell it because, it's the man's world, Japanese. So that's what happened. She realized, I think, or maybe I'm wrong, that she still wanted to keep us, or kept her also involved in that fame that we all, making money out of and stuff like that. And plus,
right.
We were going. Barbarian was the, coming up, were also behind me, and they were the stable was looking good, and he's gonna they were thinking that he's gonna be champions, in that
got some big prospects here.
Yes. So that's what happened there. So tried to sell it to another one, changed her mind to sell it to another guy, and by the end of it, everything is. The committee or the main sumo association have to move in and let her know that, she can't do that.
Yeah.
So what happened, they send one of their top guy there to Tonga and, to talk to the king and everything. At the time, the king wasn't there. It was his brother was the prime minister. And basically he said, whatever they want, of course, we were young and, homesick. We wanted to see our parents and everything, So we all changed our mind. We wanted to go, except one guy, that I feel like that I owe him a lot, that he said, where are we going? Mm-hmm. Let's stay here and give, but everybody wanted to go home. Mm-hmm. At the time, I broke my ankle from sumo, so they all left and left me there by myself at the hospital. So that's how the thing went around like that.
How does that transfer to wrestling, though?
So of course, I still wanted to go back. After 14, as 14, I went back home like what, 16, 17. Tried to go back to school. To finish high school, at least, I can get a job or something there, and didn't happen. And, my father at the time already moved to New Zealand with my mom and, the rest of the siblings there. So I tried to go back, for the sumo, but they said, no, we can't. So one of our sponsor that I talked to, and he was very involved with it, that, Tom, come on, come to, how about professional wrestling? I said, sure, why not? And he was the one who went and talked to Inoki, went and talked to Baba. And then he said to me, I think Baba is better. I like Baba, the way he trained the, guys better than Inoki. Of course, Inoki with the shooting thing there. And, this guy knows the business already. So that's how I went back, with Baba,
Started there.
We started
there. How did you like wrestling at first?
It was tough, but lucky that Tenryu was already there once again. you know, Tenno. The first day that I was in Japan, Tenno called me at the hotel. You know, of course, I never really meet him anything, but, you know, just at the Sumo Palace, Korakuen, mm-hmm. and, you know, where we, what they call Tekeiko, out, you know, training, you know, because they were also close to us. It was like 2 minutes of a walk to their stable.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we used to go and, you know, wrestle them, you know, sumo. So, you know, that was about it. But that's like it's going back to seniority.
Kohai Senpai.
Kohai and Senpai.
Tenru was a great boss to work for. I always say when we were there with WAR for 3-4 years,
right.
He was seemed like a really good-hearted guy.
Yes.
You know.
As you know, that's him.
Yeah.
You know, he was always, you know, even here in America, when we were around at the time here in Florida, working for Eddie Graham mm-hmm. at the time and everything, you know, Kabuki was here, you know, and all of, you know, it was, you know, I thought because of that, you know, I was, you know, they didn't pay as much. So, you know, I always run when I don't have money, you know, I went to Tendru, you know, and, you know, I found out later he didn't have it either. That was it. You know,
yeah.
And we were on first match or second match, but you know, he always, you know, had me, you know, money and stuff like that. When he never turned me away.
Were you always King Haku? Haku? Was that always?
No. They started up with Prince Tonga.
Oh, Prince Tonga.
And then you know, promoted to King Tonga, and then you know, of course, with Haku and you know. WWE and
did Vince give you the name Haku?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He was. I think when Haku was and Tama mm-hmm. with Tonga Kid,
right?
You know when we had that Islander team there, but you know it was Vince who asked. I think it was Yaukea Curtis.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, he wanted a name for us, and Curtis said, you know, try Tama and Haku. You know, Haku is or Haku. That's the real pronunciation for Hawaiian, you know, it's a lei, it's supposed to be, you know, like people up there, and you know, like a prince or whatever in the Hawaiian, you know, language, you know.
Okay. Did when you first came to work for Vince, was it for him or his father? Did you work for Vince Sr. or for Vince?
No, for Vince, Junior.
Okay, yeah, Vince, right off the bat.
Right, yeah. Because he brought us from Montreal.
Oh, that's where you were.
Yeah, with Dino Bravo and the Rujo.
Because you worked everywhere before you came to WWE.
Yeah, you know.
All over the place.
The old days, you know. I was here twice.
In Florida.
Worked in Florida. Went from here to Oklahoma those days, you know. Tennessee, you know. It was...
How did you like going to those places? I mean, coming from the islands and then Japan, end up like in Tennessee.
You know... Chris, it's just coming from Ireland, you know, all we have in the island is pray, singing, and all that stuff, you know. It was a great thing mm-hmm. because you see in the movie, you know, of course my favorite is the cowboy movies, you know, John Wayne and all that, yeah. You know, Clint Eastwood and all this. But, you know, I really see then, you know, like Amarillo, as you drove from Amarillo to wherever we're going, that's all I could think about. You know, I'm thinking the Indians were running down or the cowboy will come up and stop us. And you know, things like that. It was fun,
mm-hmm.
you know, for coming from a little island and be able to travel around in America, you know, the greatest country in the world. You know, that was the thing, you know, opportunities mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You know, that was the thing for us in those days, or me, myself, you know. I went from Amarillo to... Los Angeles, and that's when I met Barbarian there.
Oh.
He came over, yeah. He found out that I saw me on TV and everything, so he came over. So that's how it built up his wonder, that he wanted to be a wrestler.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you got into the business long before he did.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
Did you always want to end up to working for Vince in the WWF? Was that kind of a goal?
Yes. Because, you know, when I was in Puerto Rico at the time, Pedro Morales came over there.
Mm-hmm.
And Pedro was, you know, a good friend, you know, like you, Chris. You know, he was always there, you know, helping me out. And, you know, Tong, I think you're ready to go to New York, you know, because, you know, he can talk to. I said, I don't know, you know. You know, at the time, that was my first break there, really, you know, to work on top and everything was Puerto Rico, you know. And I thought I wasn't ready, you know. And then, you know, of course, from there to Montreal, that I was still, you know, and he kept calling me, you know, Pedro Tong, I think, is, you know, it's time for you to come over. You know? And I keep saying no, you know. And finally, when Vince McMahon took over the whole world, and, you know, there was something there. You know, it was nice that Dino Bravo told me, you know, Tonga, you know, you're coming with me and the Russos. You know, that's the deal that I guess they made.
Oh, they cut a deal for you to come in?
With those three guys.
You know,
I guess they sold whatever.
Yeah.
Vince wanted and everything, and I was part of... You know, four of us.
What was that? Like, was it like going to the big leagues of the WWE? And did you meet Vince early on when you got there? Did you see him the first day you got to work?
No. We went on to Poughkeepsie and start doing TV and stuff like that. I don't remember exactly where I met Vince for the first time, but you know, all the old timer that you see on TV, you know. We're in there, you know, and you know how it is, you know, Japanese style, you know, you always kind of stay on your own, you know, watch everything that's going on, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that was the thing of those days, you know, we would keep coming in, you know, into TV and stuff like that.
But Vince brought you in to be like this crazy Islander type guy?
No, in the beginning it was different, you know, it was, I forgot his... I forgot the book of that. George
Scott?
Scott. Mm-hmm. It was, you know. But the gimmick that I've been using, it was the karate gimmick, you know, the thing there. So when we came in there, they were bringing Steamboat with the same gimmick. So they kind of pushed me, you know, around there for tag team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with Steamboat, we were tag team. Even, you know, just like, testing around, I guess, you know, but it always team. And, you know, and my career was mostly, you know, with the tag team. You know,
okay, yeah, right. Yeah. In WWE for sure, yeah.
Right, with WWE.
I remember when we first were hanging out, I was asking, you know, like, I was like, so, like, what's it like when you're in the WWE? And you're like, oh, it's okay. And I was like, so, like, do they buy your costumes for you or do you have to buy them yourself? And you were like, you ask too many questions. Stop asking so many questions. And I was like, okay. But, you know, you were, like, the first guy that I ever met that had worked in WWE at such a high level.
Right.
So I just was wanted to know, like, how does it work? What do you do?
Yeah.
Like, so like a mark, you know, after 3 years of being in the business, but I just didn't know any better, you know?
That's why... Your make is so good because you want to know, you know, and you always, and that's something about you, Chris, you always want it, you know, I always watch you, you know, you always, even, you know, that I tried to do that, you know, learning from you with my boys.
Hmm.
When you go somewhere, try to learn, you know, the culture and eat every food that, you know, that was you.
Experience.
You know, experience it, you know, and, you know, when we were in Mexico, you were... Basically, you know, run on your own, do your things, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, like Japan, you were always, you know, you tried to learn the language, you tried to, you know, to speak the you know, the language there and, you know, and work with them, you know,
the
style and everything, you know.
Yeah.
There was something about you that I always remember that, you know.
I remember two specific times when we went out and had some drinks, and the one time was in Mexico City, and we got into Negro Casas brought us some mezcal, which is like really strong tequila.
Right.
And I think you're like, oh, you have to, like, because you were the senpai, right. You have to drink. So I would drink. Like, all right, Tonga says drink. So I drank, and I got really, really, really drunk. And then you came and knocked on my door about an hour later at 6 a.m. So we'd go do aerobics.
The gym.
So they, I went and did the 6 a.m. aerobics class. You sat in the corner and watched me do it. Like, keep going. Like, just booze just streaming out of my pores. Do more. I'm like, you do it.
You idiot. I'm here. Why don't you do it? Right?
Did that happen?
Yeah. I remember that the little gym right down the street.
Yeah, right down the street.
We went to aerobic with the...
Well, that was a great place. It was the Plaza Madrid, the hotel.
Yes.
And we all lived in that hotel.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, like Magic and yeah. Art Bar and Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
It was just a great
The whole lived there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you're off all those times, you got nothing to do but go drink.
And get drunk. Yeah. Chavo, we always downstairs, you know, drinking and listening to the guitar players.
The mariachi.
Yeah.
And there was always other foreign guys.
Yes.
That were there all the time that weren't wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like, you remember, there's a guy called Gene. He was a Texas guy named Gene.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. They were coming, you know, with their business, you know, trading, whatever. Yeah, yes.
We'd always see them.
I remember that. Yeah.
How did you end up, like, you were working in WWE? Did you get let go for your first time there? Or did you leave? Or how did that work?
Yes. It went to that point that I thought, you know, maybe it's time for me to leave. You know, for a while and come back, you know. And Vince agreed with it, but Vince said, Tonga, you know, wait. You know, I'll let you know when you leave and, you know, after a year, I was still there, you know. Whatever Vince was thinking, you know, I didn't think that way. You know what I'm saying? Probably he wants me to stay and, you know, he'll change me around maybe or whatever it needs to be. But, you know, in my mind, maybe it's better for me to go, you know, go back to Japan and then, you know, come back a year later, 2 years later, you know, and, you know, see maybe it will be different then, you know, push me, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Or something from there. But finally, Tenryu came through to talk with Vince, you know, about using, you know, WWE.
Yeah, using WWE, you know, guys, yeah.
You know, the guys there. So, you know, that's when, you know, Vince said to me, you know, Tonga, probably, you know, this is a good thing here to call with Andrew and then come back later.
Mm.
Yeah, so, you know.
Did you have a good relationship with Vince?
Yeah, yeah. I love the family. You know, that's something that, yes, always talk with them, you know. Even now, when I show up, you know, with the WrestleMania, I get to see them, you know, especially, you know, his wife and, you know, Stephanie, yeah, and Triple H there, even Shane, you know. Mm-hmm. I saw him last WrestleMania there, you know, out of nowhere, you know, he came out and, you know, grabbed me and said, I said, where were you, you know? It was nice, you know, to see him because I haven't seen him in a long time, you know. And I have to tell you, the old days, how Vince started him, you know, he wants him to carry the ring everywhere, and, you know, it was a big step for him to be the referee, and, you know, and, you know, there is something also that I take, you know, and the guy that I work for today, David Morris, you know, his son graduated from high school, and, you know, he said, you know, what are we going to do? I said, you know, let's do it like, you know, Vince McMahon did with Shane, put him in different departments. Let him learn all these things because, you know, I'm sure one day you're gonna be the owner and he's gonna be the son there, so he can learn all this.
Yeah,
when
right.
people complain, when you know people, you know, he knows he's been there and learned that department. You know,
yeah, learn all aspects of the business.
Yes.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
When you worked with for a while, I think with Andre the Giant as his tag team partner, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What was that? The idea behind that, was he getting older at that point in time, or?
Yes, I believe he was getting older at the time there, and you know he broke his ankle also, and it wasn't healed good, you know, and that's when you saw him the way he walks and everything like that, but. Out of nowhere, you know, again, they put me with him, and Chris, there was the only, you know, I found out a few years back that there was the only time for us that we both tag team champion for WWE.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You know, him. He never was a champion, I guess. You know, and there was, you know, with the tag team, it was great. You know how Tenryu, going from Tenryu to the Giant, it was something like that. You know, but Chris, you know how we used to get drunk. You know, there was the payback.
Yeah.
It was this time, it was me and him. What I used to do to you, he did it to me. it was, he used to laugh at me when I, you know, when we go after wrestling and have something to eat and start drinking. Yeah, of course, you know, he thinks that I was as big as he is. So, you know, one beer. I drink one beer, you drink one beer, you know, that's how it end up, you know, like, my goodness. The point that I, maybe 12 beers or 20 beers that I can drink, he was still drinking. I said, boss, I'm going to bed. Of course, I had to look for the door. Where did I come in?
Would he let you go?
Yeah.
Well, then he was nicer than you were to me.
No, wait, no.
Another one I remember was we were in Acapulco. We always had fun in Acapulco.
Yes.
At a Denny's. Must have been later on from the coconut night.
Right.
And you had us drink fire cucarachas.
Right.
Jimmy cucarachas?
Yes.
Flaming cucarachas.
Yeah.
And you made me drink those. And to this day, I still can't drink hot alcohol. And then I remember just holding your hand, walking down the street back to the hotel, like you were my father, and I was like three years old, like holding your hand, like don't let me go because I'm gonna get lost and disappear into the night for good.
And remember that night that I was almost run over by a pickup truck, and you pushed me over to the media there. You know, that's how. Otherwise, you know, Bobby, the, you know, those damn Mexican, you know, will run over me on a pickup truck. You know,
well,
you saved my life on that. You know,
I think
goes the senpai.
I bet you if the truck would have hit you, it just would have broke. The like, you wouldn't even move.
I don't know about that, but thank you.
You're getting a treat.
At least we're still sitting here. And
I just remembered one of the greatest stories ever in the airport in Mexico. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
I forgot about that until right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell it from my end and you tell me from yours. So I was going to, once again, Acapulco, and my traffic was bad. So I got to the airport late and I was trying to make the flight. And when I went through the security, the guys were messing with me a bit.
Yes.
Because, you know, they could do, the Mexican guys would mess with the foreigners. And they found, I was a champion at the time, they found my belt.
Right.
And then they started looking at the toothpaste. What is this? And what is that? Like, listen, I got 5 minutes to make this flight.
Right.
Can I go or not? And they were getting on my nerves so bad, and I was getting so pissed off that somebody put their hand on me. I turned around and pushed the person, and it was a female security guard.
Right.
And then everything started breaking down. Watched I get surrounded by these guys, and the guy, I believe, even pulled out a gun. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm like, what am I going to do? And I hear this, hey! And I look, and here comes the cavalry. You come running down the alley. What do you remember? What did you see from your end?
Well, you know, you were ahead of me because we were going this, you know, in the same plane and everything. But like you said,
took
you
separate
were rushing
taxis or whatever. Yeah,
but I was coming in from the ticket counter, so you know, I heard, you know, all this commotion is going around there. So as I ran in there, I heard your voice, you know, and I saw all this. Police looked like, you know, they were, you know, surrounding you. That's when I run in there, you know. And and we stopped pushing around those cards and everything. And, you know, we were going at it, you know, and I never forget that. My goodness. You know, Chris, the thing was, I mean, we were ready to beat the...
Yeah, we were surrounded by
all these people.
The cops,
And then the cops came in.
Oh, yeah.
And then the cops...
The real cops.
Right.
Yeah.
Pulling guns on us and everything, you know. And that's when, out of nowhere, do you remember that? Out of nowhere, this, that I call today still, an angel.
Mm-hmm.
This lady, out of nowhere, came in. I don't know what in the world that she was telling them or whatever is, and, you know, everything gunned down and everything, and they pull us to her office.
She spoke perfect English. Right. remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, and she came because, because you're right. The first was I was surrounded by the airport security.
Right.
Then you came. Then the real cops came with the guns.
Right.
Then she came and kind of calmed them down and spoke perfect English.
Right.
I don't know if she worked for the airport or what it was.
Right.
But, yeah, then they stuck us in a room.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I remember you and me just sitting in this room like, God, like, man, thanks for helping me. And what the hell? What just happened? And we sat there for two hours. Yeah. And this is like there's no cell phones then. You look at your watch. We're just sitting there. Then finally a guy opened the door and came in. And he was like the general manager of the airport. And I remember him saying, like, listen, everything's good, but I think it's in your best interest to tip the airport security for their hassle. A.K.A. give us some money and we'll let you out.
Right.
I remember the two of us. How much you got? I got 100 pesos. I got another 50 cents here. And we pulled together like 400 pesos or some just horrible little sum.
Right.
The guy took it and left.
Yeah. I don't remember all the way there, but, you know, because I was so pissed off.
Yeah.
You know, when I saw what they were doing, you know, was grabbing the bell, holding the bell, and,
making
a joke of it, and, yeah. There was, you know, but I remember that lady, you know, that there was our savior there.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And then, but it was like the longest day ever because then we caught the last flight to Acapulco.
Yes.
And we got there and we had to take, to make the flight, I think we had to buy first class tickets because those were the only two that were left.
Yeah.
And in Mexico, it's like an extra $100 or whatever.
Yeah.
So we make it to the show. It was a sold out show and it was you and me. And I remember Negro Casas was in there and it was like super hot and sweaty. So we went in there and had the match and you were really ramped up. Like you were still pissed off and we won the match. I remember you raised my hand and to like 3 weeks later, my shoulder was still killing. You're like, So then we go back into the dressing room and then the promoter is going to come to give us the money for the tickets, except for he's not going to pay us for the tickets because we flew first class.
Right.
And we said, no, you're going to pay for them because we got to the show. We saved the show.
Yes.
None of us wanted to get arrested, but you know, it's an extra 100 whatever bucks.
Right.
Pay us the money. He wouldn't pay the money, so you went to find him. Do you remember this? You flipped out like you won't pay us the money, and he was upstairs in this little room.
Yes,
and you threw open the door like it was locked, and you like pulled open the door and started yelling at this guy. He was hiding behind his desk. You're like, you're going to pay us the money. You owe us the money, and you started talking like half Tongan and maybe some Japanese got thrown out. Magic was there too. So yeah, he ended up paying us the money, but you ripped his door off the hinge and the poor guy was like, okay, senor, I'm so sorry. Just like the Wild West of Mexico, you know, how things were there.
Those days, Chris, you know, my God, thank God that we're still alive. The way we, you know, especially myself, you know, it seems like you had to fight for, you know, for your money in Mexico. You know, it seems like you always, you know, and, you know, thank God we didn't got shot, or you know what I'm saying?
Easily could have.
Yeah.
Did you get in any fights at all with any of the guys in Mexico, or did they? Because in Mexico, sometimes the guys were a little salty. I'm talking about the guys in the ring where they wouldn't want to sell for you or had a little bit of an attitude. Did you ever get that?
Yeah, yeah. That was, I think, with the other company that they came in for CMLL,
mm-hmm.
and we wrestled against them. I forgot.
Was it Minez? Was it Canek? Maybe.
Canek. Yeah. Canek, and you know. And Canek was just going, you know, I mean, beating up everybody, you know, he won't sell for nobody, you know, and I had a little thing with him. But Dos Callas, you know, as I was, you know, I just didn't sell, you know, I just go at it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, trying to fight him.
You shoot back if you have to,
yeah. And then, you know, Dos Callas, you know, I guess he looked at Dos Callas in the same time, you know, hey, pick this up or whatever it is, you know. And, you know, those guys tell me, amigo, take it easy, amigo. You know, this is work, amigo, you know. But, you know, in the same time, it was like I was protecting CMLL.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This is my company.
Yeah.
This is the company that I work for. That's the company you work for, you know. We are bigger than you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
still had that pride.
Yeah. That stupid pride. At the time. Yes, that was the only thing there. But mostly, you know, was with the promoters. I always run around run after the promoter, you know, trying to get my money. You know?
But it was never. We worked for Paco Alonso, who was like the Vince of Mexico. Paco was never the problem.
No.
It was when you go to these outskirt towns, either they would pay you individually or pay for your trans.
Right.
That's what we were collecting in these different cities that we would go to.
Yeah, Paco was always good to us.
Yeah.
You know, and it was. But, you know, it was the other promoters, you know, independents, that they, you know, away from CMLL. Yeah.
Mm.
And, you know, I heard, you know, even with the guys there, what's his name from Canada also, from Toronto?
Vampiro?
Vampiro. Yeah. Vampiro always said to me, Tonga, you better get your money. Because those son of a bitches, you know, they won't give it to you. You know, you have to really make them, you know, pay you. Otherwise, you know, they'll try to disappeared or you know, get your money first before you know you go into the ring or something like that. You know,
was it hard or different to go from WWE, which is, you know, big time arenas and WrestleMania, and then go to Mexico, where it's third world in a lot of cases?
Yeah, you know me, Chris, WWF was the same as Mexico to me, was same as Japan, you know, they all in the same level. But you're right, of course, you know, WWF was the place. Everybody's dream to be in WWF. You know, I was just being wrestling. It was my thing. And, you know, wherever I'm going to make the money to send to my parents and send back to home, you know, that's where I'm going. You know, there was, I didn't put any class, you know, you're number one, you're number two. You know, there's something we all understand normally. Hey, WWF is number one.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me it was, you know, it's a job, it's a job.
Right.
You know, that was for me, you know, and I look at, you know, in that way. If probably if I was concentrate in wrestling alone, you know, I would make more money and, you know, and instead of being stupid, you know, fighting everybody and, you know, and having a few drinks here and there, you know, would be nice, you know.
But, did you ever get in fights, like, if you went out with the boys on the street, like, you know, did you ever get in fights with, like, sometimes, like just people in a bar or something like that? Were you fighting those type of guys sometimes, too?
Yeah, yeah. I had to give you a good one with, you know, in WCW, with Arn Anderson. You know, we were, you know, we share room, we traveled together and all this stuff. That's a brother there, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember one time we were in, first time I think I was in Memphis. I work in Nashville, but I never went to Memphis, you know. But with WWE now, I believe, you know, F then. So we went to a bar, and as we walk in there, it was me and him, they stop us, you know, that we can't go in there. I guess because something that the bouncer was telling me, you know, and Arn said to me, can you believe it? So I felt like, you know, Arn, go ahead and go. Bobby is me. I'm the color one here, you know. So as Arn stepped, he said, Tonga, no, 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 we're going in. You know, Arn, you know, being, you know, called here, the manager, you know, the bouncer giving says, you know, so I had to put the Tongan death grip on him and lay him down there.
The manager?
No, the bouncer.
Oh, the bouncer.
And then we went in and have a drink in there. All of a sudden, here comes, I guess he got up, you know, whatever happened there. All of a sudden, there were five of them came in there. You know, I'm sitting there and hold a purse of this girl was a fan, you know, that, you know, she wanted to dance, so I'm holding the purse there, you know, sitting at the stool bar, you know. Can you imagine that? And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, here comes the five guys there. You know, Arn turned around and said, Tonga, look out, you know. Turn around, here comes the five guys that start to beat me up there. You know, of course, you know, I had to get up and fight them, you know. As I was fighting them, you know, they called the police. So, you know, I had to walk all over them and grab Arn and said, you know, Arn, you're driving. Let's go. Let's get out of here. That was, you know, something that, and, you know, a lot of stupid things that I did, you know, poor Arn.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, like Arn always said, Tonga, I don't know. You're not the most handsome guy in the world or the best looking body in the world. Something about you that, you know, everybody don't like you the way you look. Every time we go to a bar to have a couple drink, relaxing, nobody, you know, somebody don't like you. You know, so, Aaron, come on now. You know, I am the most handsome guy in the world. But, you know, that was the things there, you know, the same thing with, you know, you and me there, Chris.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, it's, you know, when you're on the road away from home and, you know, like you said, spending all this time away, and you got to have a couple drinks and release some steam sometimes, man. You know, I mean, that's just the way it goes. I remember one time we were walking downtown in Japan. Maybe it was Roppongi or something. We walked past a big window, like a picture glass window.
Yeah.
And someone said, oh, that's the window that Haku bought. Because I guess you had thrown somebody through the window at some point and had to pay for it.
Yes. I think that was my guarantee for that tour. went to that window, you know. My goodness. Chris, you know, we laugh about it now,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, it was. Yes.
Did you enjoy when they had you be Ming, the WCW character for you?
Yes. Mm. Thank you for asking. I think that was my best. You know,
really?
Yeah,
interesting.
Part of my career that, you know, more like they, you know, with all everything they were doing there, I felt like they let me out of the gate, mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So, you know, yes, I enjoyed that very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ming gimmick.
So why do you say it was your best work of your career?
Because of the thing that they did with me. Oh, the little push that they have for me there.
It was a whole new repackaging, too.
Right.
Your hair was wild, right. And just yes. It was a different type
and
of
And they have look. The hakama.
Yeah.
The hakama that I, you know, thought maybe there would be something that I, you know, changed to, like you said, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes. There was something there that I, you know, feel like that was me, you mm-hmm. know. I don't know if it was good or bad, but, you know, I felt like, you know, with all the things that they put me into, you know, and also with Goldberg, you know, there was something there that I...
Did you work with him as a program? With
yes.
Goldberg? Oh. Okay.
The program, that one night thing, it was one night thing. Okay. They were trying to beat you guys, you know.
Yeah.
With WWE, you know, how we go...
yeah, it was the Monday Raw. Night Wars,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, those were the things that... But, you know, that's when, nowadays that I look back at the business there... You know, there was something there that I wish that they changed. You know, they shouldn't go on with it. But they were my bosses and everything.
What did they do that you didn't like?
They beat me when I got to with Goldberg. But I would say something there because Hogan and them were outside. You know, the ring while you know, keep throwing us. You know,
lumberjack match. Yeah,
lumberjack match. You know. At the end there, you know, with, I think, will be more heat and leave me to come back with Goldberg some other time, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That when Goldberg go to cover me there, that I wish that Hogan came in and saved me, you know, with the, you know.
Chair or something,
with
yeah.
the chair and hit him and get more heat, you know, all of them. Come in there and beat him up and everything and save me for later on.
Mm-hmm,
instead
mm-hmm.
of building me up the whole night through and then beat me right there.
Yes, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I got you. Yeah, exactly.
And that was the only thing ever in my career that I look back at, you know, today and then said, well, if they, you know, maybe would. Because why? Goldberg, after that match, I think we had another 5-6 matches.
Hmm.
Me and Goldberg, and he keep beating me,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these matches here. But because he rather work with me off that, you know, MMA style that he,
you sure?
he likes.
Believable style.
Yeah, you know, believable style yeah. that he, you know, and all this, and also the commercial that we did, you know, with the thing there, he wanted me to, you know, to do the commercial with him, you know.
Well, a commercial so. For a game or something, or a commercial
It was for pizza. Oh. It was And that was the that summer of that year. I don't remember exactly, Chris, that year, but it was summer that year. Even my children were enjoying it. You know, they were on vacation with their mother in Seattle somewhere there. You know, they called me and said, "Dad, you on the on the commercial here in Seattle?" You know, so you know that was the thing that
I think at the time Goldberg was doing the streak and beating everybody, but
right.
there were certain guys that they could have done a nice long thing
right.
with you guys,
yeah,
because it was like I said, you were very believable in that role,
right?
A tough
the Steiners
guy.
You know, even you know with the Steiner did, you know, there was
sure
something, you know. So
I remember we had a great match. It was you and Barb versus me and Eddie in San Francisco or something like this. It was one of my favorite WCW matches. I still remember it to this day, even though I don't think I've seen it since. Just thinking about it, I think, man, that was a great match, you know?
Yeah, how about, you're good with your iPhone and all that, whatever is going on in the world today, Chris, you know. Me, I'm just catching up.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden I hit something on the iPhone that, you know, and pop up that, you know, the other day it was a match between me and Jumbo Tsuruta against Perfect and Ricky Martel.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, WWF and...
In Japan?
Japan. I'm not sure if it was, you know, New Japan, I mean All Japan or... Tenryu.
Yeah, maybe you guys did also SWS, which is when Tenryu broke away and brought in all the WWF guys.
Oh, okay.
I bet you that's what it was from. Yeah.
Then I remember the match. You know, I don't even remember the match.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I look at Jumbo, that was the thing there. You know, I was with Jumbo. So, you know, Bobby was still All Japan.
Yeah, All Japan.
Yeah.
Maybe the SWS thing. But
right.
Another one we worked, it was in Japan one time. It was a single match. And another one of my favorite matches that we'll never be able to see because I don't think anybody filmed it. It was just on a normal show. But you made people believe that I could beat you. And I was really just starting.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think your finish was a powerbomb, but you gave me one and I kicked out of it.
Right.
And the people just went nuts. And then you picked me up and gave me another one. I used that exact finish a couple of years ago with CM Punk for his finishing move. Hit me with it. I'll kick out. Then pick me up and give me one more. It's like, I did this thing with Haku once, but it was very well done the way you put it together. So that people thought I could beat you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate, you know, getting to the age now that I, you know, and of course being far, far behind the technology today. But, those are, you know, I always, and I thank you, you know, like I always said, you know, to everybody, they are all these years that we were together, and I always believed that, you know, that was my family, away from my family, it was you, you know, Eddie Guerrero and all, you know, the black man.
Talking about black magic.
Remember the one that were you there?
When?
We went and,
Halcyon Bowling?
Yeah, Halcyon Bowling.
We had this great idea that we would drink, or some guys took some Halcyons, which were the sleeping pills at the time, and let's take some Halcyons and go bowling and see what happens.
Right.
And I remember you, and I'm probably in my mind's eye not remembering it properly, but I do remember you overhand throwing a ball down the court.
Right.
And I could say you got a strike, but you probably missed completely, but you just overhand. People, go grab a bowling ball and try and throw it overhand like a baseball down the damn court. That's
And what's his name from Portland?
Art Barr.
Art Barr. Remember Art Barr threw the ball, and he went with the ball together like a Tom and Jerry thing there. My goodness, he went level with the ball, and he came down hard.
He couldn't get his fingers out of the bowling ball, so he just went down together all the same way.
Together with the ball.
What do you miss wrestling at all?
Wow. Chris, not yet.
Not yet.
I haven't missed the wrestling yet.
Mm-hmm.
But just, again, you know, it's like you said about, you know, what do I think about going from WWE to Mexico and, you know, it's, you know, just still, you know, get to see you and all the boys here and there, you know. I still feel like we're together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, no, I haven't missed wrestling yet.
Yeah.
Because it's always there, you know. with you guys, you know, I know, thinking sometimes I'm driving from home to work, I think about you, what we did, like we just talk about, you know, Japan, you know, things like that, you know.
Yeah.
In the same time, you know, saying my prayer, thanking God, you know, for all the things that I'm still alive and have my family there. And, you know, those are like going in to sign autographs and stuff like that. I know money is important, but, you know, more important to me to see you guys. You know, that's why I was, you know, you're in the corner there in your own room. I come in to say hello.
It's like we were, you hear about like old war buddies getting together after 20 years and you see each other and it's like nothing has changed. It's like no time has gone by whatsoever.
Right.
It's just completely clicked and you're just no issues or uncomfortable. It's just right off the bat. Hey, what's going on?
Yes, blah, blah, blah. Yes.
That's the, because no one will ever know what it was like for us being in those trenches of wrestling.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, very true.
Last question for you. If you had to choose one match or maybe a couple matches that stand out in your mind as your favorite that you ever had, what would you say?
Oh, my goodness. What would I... Chris, very good question, but I never think of, you know, all the matches, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right, they're, you know, you got me, because, you know, I can't bring it up now.
Who were some guys that you always enjoyed working with?
Again,
yeah,
I always enjoy working with all of you, you know what I'm saying? Whatever, however the schedule for that, you know. That was my job, you know, to go against you or Eddie, you know, and all that. You know, there was part of it, you know, that I always enjoy everybody.
Yeah.
You know, even when everybody think that I'm nobody, you know, I still enjoy them. You know, hey, you know, it's the family. We're working together here. You know, I put you over. He put me over. Mm-hmm. You know, everything here that we work together to keep our business going. That was something for me that I always, you know, like the old days they said, you know, if you can do it in the ring, make sure you can do it outside the ring. You know, how we protect the business.
Yeah.
So, you know, those the things there that was always to me, you know, that everybody, that I don't know, really, I can't answer you.
Just so many great memories and great opponents.
Yeah,
and,
with everybody. Yeah. Because to me, even today, Chris, this moment is my moment with you again. It's very important to me, from my heart. You know, it's very important to see you, very important to talk with you about, you know, these things. And, you know, when I leave here, you know, whoever is next, my wife maybe, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So every match to me was very important because of that moment. You know, as I always said to our employee, you know, good morning. I mean it. You know, it's a great morning because, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I can get out there and I have Aiden Wheeler run over me and there was, you know what I'm saying? At least I die with a big smile or whatever it is. But that's,
You know, that's actually a really good answer. You live in the moment of every match was a good one because you were doing what you love to do with your friends.
Right, right.
You know, and I'll say this too, and you might not know this, but everybody knows you and even the people that don't know you, but everybody that's ever met you, I've never heard anybody say a bad word about you. You're one of those few guys in this business that, like, oh, this mother, this guy. Everybody always talks about how much they love Tonga.
Thank
and
you,
Haku. So
I appreciate it.
That's your legacy in the business. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, senpai.
Thank you, Kohai.
Thanks again to King Haku, one of my oldest friends in the business. Super polite, so much fun to talk to, and great too. He's got an infectious laugh, an infectious smile, but boy, what a bear of a man. I'll tell you what, one of the toughest guys I've ever met in this business or any other. But thanks to King Haku. And while I'm rolling out the thank yous, big one, of course, to all of you for supporting this podcast and the tremendous sponsors who make it all possible. DDP Yoga, go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDP Yoga related merch. Then there's the Books. Go to Books.com. Use my promo code Jericho. Save 20% off your order, BOUQS.com. And go to Little Caesars. Get the Smokehouse Pizza for just $9 for a limited time only. And don't forget all of the great shows on the Jericho Network. Most importantly, the Raven Effect, killing it on the Jericho Network. He had Mr. Skin on the show this week. What an interesting guest. Mr. Skin runs the MrSkin.com website, which documents nudity in film. You basically give Mr. Skin an actress's name. He'll tell you what movie she appears in. naked, what exactly she's showing. And yes, they debate the best nude scene of all time. I know what my guess was, and my guess was actually the one that was picked as the greatest nude scene of all time. What do you think the greatest naked scene is in any movie that you've seen? Hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho and tell me your favorite nude scene in any movie you've ever seen. Check it out and go listen to The Raven Effect to hear the answer from Mr. Skin, the expert. And don't just check out The Raven Effect. Subscribe to it on iTunes. Leave 5-star ratings and reviews. Do the same for Team Tiger Awesome so that you never miss Team Tiger Awesome's hilarious take, hilarious shows, hilarious fake news like this.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. After almost 100 years of being the world's most dangerous game, hunting people for sport has been dethroned. Congratulations, bazooka juggling, long known as the second most dangerous game, on claiming that top spot. In music news, another 30-something-year-old man was disappointed today when he realized his favorite band from childhood was actually never that good. The publicist for the Spin Doctors did not respond to our request for comment. And now, a look at the markets. The black market is still illegal. The bull market is one thing, while the bear market seems to be something else. Market 8, dude, is down 2 points from 10, and I'm pretty sure I'm not hip enough to go to my local farmer's market anymore. This has been the news with Team Tiger Awesome. For more, tune in to the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday on the Jericho Network right here on Podcast One.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Hit that subscribe button so you get the Team Tiger Awesome show delivered straight to your phone every Sunday morning. And do it for Talk is Jericho as well. I want to get up to 2,000 comments. That's the goal. People, I know you can help me out there. It'll be a huge help to this show with advertisers and getting more great guests. So hit the comment section on iTunes. Let me know what you're digging and who you want to hear on this show. And guess what? The Jericho Network is welcoming another new podcast to the lineup. It's Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Mitch is a noted rock journalist. He's interviewed pretty much everybody in rock and roll, and he's bringing his amazing music interview show to the Jericho Network. His first episode debuts on Monday, and he's got the elusive Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Andy Summers of the Police is going to be there. He knows everybody. He gets great stories out of all of his guests. He knows all the tidbits, all the behind-the-scenes hoopla. He is Mitch LaFon, Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon, starting on the Jericho Network this Monday night. Okay, he's going to be up and running on Monday. Don't forget Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Check it out. And don't forget, too, to check out the Blood Divisions album. Comes out on Friday. It's a side project of mine that I put together with the all-stars of the Florida death metal scene of the 80s. Guys from Obituary, Six Feet Under, Nasty Savage, Dark Angel, Morbid Angel. And we're doing a lot of fun stuff. We're doing a UFO cover, Hot and Ready. We're doing a Scorpions cover, Top of the Bill. Doing a couple of old Nasty Savage songs reworked, some nude material. It's Blood Divisions. The record is called Cardinal One on Metal Blade Records. It is out on Friday, so you got to check it out. It's out today, right now, right here. Go check it out on iTunes, and you can pick it up and check that out. Hot and Ready is a great tune, so you might want to check that out. So thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And next Wednesday starts WrestleMania week. That's right, WrestleMania week. I've got two huge guests. Figuratively and literally, as they are both massive human beings, and they're both going to be in WrestleMania on Wednesday. I got Big Cass is going to be here. Huge guy. How you doing? We got a couple of haters over here. Cass will be on by himself on Wednesday and on Friday. One of the most controversial figures, and in one of the main events of WrestleMania, you guys have been asking for him. You want him, you got him. Roman Reigns, be here on Friday. We'll see you then. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Have a great weekend.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.